third case of the day, the United States versus Ortega-Vargas. Mr. Carmichael.
Good morning, Your Honor. Christopher Carmichael on behalf of the appellant. We've asked this court to vacate and remand the sentence for Mr. Ortega-Vargas based on two errors. The first error involves this fast-track disparity. The court believed it could not, that Mr. Vargas, would not qualify for a fast-track because he had a prior crime of violence. That's a misreading of what the fast-track program requires as implemented by the Attorney General. If you look at the Attorney General's memo, he was talking about classes of cases in which the offense involves certain offenses that he was going to designate as crimes of violence. He didn't want those fast-tracked. So he didn't want you making a fast-track of a bank robbery case. This is an illegal reentry case. It does not qualify under that memo. In addition, the memo cites to 28 CFR 28.2, and this is not an offense under there. The district court misunderstood and believed that the crimes of violence generally, based on a view of the actual crime, would exclude
him. Didn't Judge Clavert take all these factors into consideration? I mean, it was just as a regular sentencing. It didn't seem to me there was any chance this guy was going to get a break from Judge Clavert.
Well, he did take everything into consideration, but he also said
and he wasn't under the opinion that he didn't have discretion.
On the fast track, he was under the belief that there was a disqualifying event that wouldn't have possibly made this relevant. And I think he focused on it several times, saying that I'm rejecting your fast track argument based on this crime of violence. If Judge Clavert wasn't under that impression, I'm not sure that he would have reached the same result.
Well, didn't the government say something to him about the fact that didn't fit?
The government argued the whole time that the crime of violence was an excluding event, and my co-counsel, the amicus, will provide some more information on the fast-track program. So the government was saying, oh, these programs he doesn't qualify for, and there's sort of a lot of misinformation out there about what is going on with these different fast-track programs. And the government's initial response every time a defendant argues and says, I would qualify for the fast-track program if I were found elsewhere, they say, no, he wouldn't because he's got a crime of violence or some other reason. And Judge Clavert also took a look at the consecutive versus the concurrent sentences and felt that there was a policy prohibiting a concurrent sentence, that too was an error. The judge wrongly believed that pre-Booker there was some type of prohibition. We've cited plenty of case law, and if you look at the proper guideline, it's the 5G 1.3c. I assume that the judge was referring to A. That's not the guideline that applies. He doesn't actually commit the illegal entry offense while he's in jail. He's actually already committed it, and it's certainly not what the intent of A was to apply to that. I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Carmichael. Mr. Burnham?
May it please the Court, James Burnham here on behalf of Amicus, the Mandel Legal Aid Clinic. As Amicus, we have two concerns in this case. The first is explaining how Kimbrough against the United States overruled prior Seventh Circuit precedent on the fast-track issue, barring sentencing courts from considering the disparity unwarranted under 3553A6. The second is demonstrating that defendants with prior crimes of violence are not barred from receiving fast-track pleas, as Judge Clevert appeared to believe in the court below. For the first point, this court formally held in United States against Martinez-Martinez and other cases that judges had no discretion to deem fast-track disparities unwarranted for two reasons. One, Congress had authorized the commission to issue a policy statement creating fast-track programs in the PROTECT Act. And second, the House of Representatives had acknowledged in a House report that fast-track disparities would result from the creation of these programs. Kimbrough against the United States explicitly rejected this reasoning. Kimbrough requires, which of course came after Martinez-Martinez and the others, Kimbrough requires an express congressional statement to limit sentencing courts' 3553A discretion. Specifically, Kimbrough said, quote, drawing meaning from silence is particularly inappropriate, end quote, in the sentencing context, begin quote, for Congress has shown that it knows how to direct sentencing in express terms. In the fast-track context, there is no explicit statement from Congress. All Congress did in the PROTECT Act was authorize the Sentencing Commission to authorize the Attorney General to create early disposition programs. It said nothing about disparities and did not even limit early disposition programs to some number of districts. In other words, under the statute, the AG could create an early disposition program in all 92 judicial districts, and that would be perfectly fine. So the PROTECT Act said nothing about disparities. Furthermore, at least three of these programs operate entirely through charge bargaining, and so those are completely outside of any sort of congressional endorsement or congressional warrant that there is. And of course, courts routinely are allowed to consider prosecutorial decisions when they're sentencing. They're permitted to reject plea bargains, they're permitted to reject prosecutor sentence recommendations, and indeed United States versus Booker makes very clear that sentencing courts are supposed to look at the defendant's real conduct, not whatever the charges are, when crafting a sentence under 3553A. And indeed, that's the focus of the guidelines, now advisory as well. With regard to the second point, I think if the transcript is not entirely clear, but it does appear that Judge Clavert believed that crimes of violence categorically barred defendants from receiving fast-track pleas. Twice in the court below, he stated the government's position as being, and he did this on page 6 and pages 17 and 18 of the transcript, as being that defendants with prior crimes of violence are categorically excluded from fast-track consideration. This was not even the government's argument below. The government in their sentencing memo said that defendants with prior crimes of violence, let me just finish this point, typically did not receive fast-track offers. The court overstated that position and thought that they had said that they categorically were excluded from fast-track consideration, and this is a misimpression that the government did not correct below. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Burnham. Ms. Waska?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Kelly Watska, and I represent the United States in this matter. This is an illegal reentry offense. The defendant received a 53-month sentence that was 4 months below the bottom of his advisory guideline range. And we're here today because the defendant believes he should have received an even lower sentence due to prosecutorial delay and the absence of a fast-track program in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. But in pursuing those claims on appeal, I think that the defendant has tried to characterize this case as something that it clearly is not. This is not a case where the district court said, I am not going to consider your fast-tracked or your delay arguments, or I can't consider your fast-tracked or your delay arguments. Nor is it a case where the district court said, gee, I'd really like to impose a lesser sentence, but I don't have the discretion to do it on those grounds. And finally, with respect to this fast-track issue, this is not a case where the district court said, I find as a matter of law that this defendant would be categorically precluded from participation in any fast-track program because of his criminal record. Instead, this is a case where the district court clearly considered every one of the defendant's sentencing arguments. He engaged the parties, as is typical of Judge Clavert's style, in a colloquy during the sentencing hearing and asked relevant questions about the facts and issues relating to each of these arguments raised on appeal here today. He even characterized the defense counsel's fast-track arguments as intriguing. But ultimately, he rejected that as a basis for imposing a variance in this case, in this particular case, based on this particular defendant's history and characteristics. And during his colloquy with the parties at the sentencing hearing, he offered reasons why he was rejecting those arguments. And it was perfectly reasonable for the district court to conclude, based on this record, that this defendant's particular history, which included multiple acts involving very violent behavior, multiple acts involving serious drug trafficking activity, most significantly, drug activity that occurred after the defendant had been ordered removed from the country and illegally returned to this country. The district court was entirely reasonable to conclude that history suggested that this defendant's, first of all, it reflected very poorly on his character, and that this defendant was deserving of a serious punishment that was separate and distinct from the punishment he received for his most recent drug trafficking conviction in the state of Wisconsin. Now, the defendant and his amicus have argued that this court ought to reach the ultimate question in this case, which is to make a determination about what, if any, effect the Supreme Court's decision in the Kimbrough case had on circuit precedent on this fast-track issue. And I'm going to submit to the court that this is not the proper vehicle for that determination for several reasons. First of all, as I've indicated, the district court did, in fact, consider the defendant's fast-track arguments and simply rejected them. And so the only question for review would be whether the district court was obligated to adopt the defendant's view of this issue. And the answer to that question is, of course he wasn't. Second, this defendant has not and frankly cannot demonstrate that he is similarly situated to defendants, illegal aliens who receive fast-track dispositions. He did not waive or give up the rights that fast-track defendants are required to give up. He did not waive his right to be indicted, his right to pursue an appeal or post-conviction relief under 2255. And so, in effect, this defendant is asking the court for a benefit. He's asking the court for something in exchange for nothing. The government received nothing in exchange for this particular resolution. And Kimbrough didn't contemplate disparities that result when defendants offer different benefits to the government. Finally, the defendant has not and cannot demonstrate that he would have qualified for a fast-track disposition even if he had been found in a district which had adopted such a program based upon his criminal history. Now, the district court did not make an explicit finding in this case that his battery conviction was a crime of violence, as that term is defined under 18 U.S.C. Section 16A. He didn't need to, because rather than speculating as to what might have happened to this defendant in a fast-track district, he decided the fast-track issue on the merits. But clearly he could have made that finding. At least it's the government's view that he could. All that's required is that the defendant have an offense that has as an element the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force against another. And clearly this defendant's battery conviction was extremely violent and satisfied that both on the elements and on the facts. Unless the court has any questions, I'm simply going to ask the court to affirm the defendant's sentence.
Thank you, Ms. Watson.
Thank you.
Ms. Carmichael?
Your Honors, I would first point out that effectively the court sentenced, effectively Mr. Vargas will be serving 62 months. He was given a 53-month sentence after serving 9 months. So the sentencing was actually below the guidelines, but his total sentence will actually be within the guidelines range. I would point out that the judge was very clear in several points in which he felt that the fast-track argument couldn't be applied to Mr. Vargas because of this prior violent felony or prior violent crime, and that he felt that there was this policy that prevented him from considering whether or not there should have been some delay and prejudice for this delay. We've got a 40-month delay here. It's different than almost any other case that this court has considered. There's a Jimenez case with 16th-month delay, but that was explained. We've got no explanation for a 40-month delay and a 53-month sentence. That's a large amount of time that shows that Mr. Vargas potentially had some prejudice here because he could have sought that, and there's no explanation by the government for this very large delay. We'd ask that you vacate the sentence and send back for resentencing.
Thank you, Mr. Carmichael. Mr. Burnham?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple quick points. With regard to whether Mr. Ortega-Vargas is similarly situated to defendants in fast-track districts, I mean, amicus admittedly doesn't have all the information about Fast Track because the government has refused to disclose any of the details of how the program operates. We filed a Freedom of Information request. We petitioned the Sentencing Commission. Nobody knows. We do know, though, from talking to federal defenders in other districts and from obtaining district-specific authorization memos, that in at least six districts, Fast Track is routinely extended to crime of violent defendants with prior crimes of violence who have committed illegal reentry offenses. So on that point, we know that Mr. Ortega-Vargas is probably similarly situated to defendants in at least those districts. Second, with regard to the waiver point, I just think the waiver point is rather cynical because Mr. Ortega-Vargas is being asked, it's sort of like asking a customer to pay while refusing to ever deliver the goods. The government is demanding that Mr. Ortega-Vargas waive all of his rights, his 2255 rights, his appellate rights, while simultaneously fighting it as hard as it can to prevent him from getting a fast-track level sentence. So I don't think that the point should carry much weight. And finally, with respect to the judge below, oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I see I'm out of time.
You can finish that sentence.
Okay, I just wanted to say, with respect to the judge below, Judge Clavert appeared to think that the government was arguing that crimes of violence categorically excluded defendants, and that misapprehension was never corrected by the government or by the judge himself, and I think that is procedural error. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks, Burnham. Thanks to all counsel. I want to add an additional thanks of the court to Mr. Carmichael for accepting this appointment and ably representing the interests of Mr. Ortega-Vargas. And I want to thank the Mandel Legal Clinic, Ms. Ziegler, Mr. Burnham, and Ms. Love for their fine argument presented in the amicus brief. The case is taken under advisement.